Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. Check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Joe's got 23 years of experience in the real estate business. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, Charles Goldman with me, folks, 2 weeks in a row. A quick shout out to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Charles, big Irish music fan?
No.
Oh. Well, I think less of you. I think less of you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, well, you're still my second favorite person after Marjorie Taylor Greene.
After Marjorie Taylor, okay.
Yeah. So I want to play a clip, folks. We're going to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene's recent appearance on 60 Minutes. I'm going to play a clip for you from when she resigned, announcing her resignation effective January 5th.
I refuse to be a battered wife, hoping it all goes away and gets better. If I am cast aside by the president and the MAGA political machine and replaced by neocons, big pharma, big tech, military-industrial war complex, foreign leaders, and the elite donor class that can never, ever relate to real Americans, then many common Americans have been cast aside and replaced as well. I'll be resigning from office with my last day being January 5th, 2026, and I look forward to seeing many of you again sometime in the future. May God bless you all, and may God bless America.
Well, that's Marjorie Taylor Greene's resignation speech, short and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have basically given the same speech. Except for the better wife part, I don't blame her for being feeling that way.
Well, at least she didn't say I'm retiring to spend more time with my family.
Yeah, well, she's I think partly though she's retiring because she's afraid for her family's life. I mean, not just has she been threatened, but her son has been threatened. Mm-hmm. I mean, threatened in a serious way. I mean, and the guy who threatened her son. Used the same language that Trump used to describe her, Marjorie Traitor Greene. Because Trump, right. Once you're on the outs with him, he's got to find a name to call you.
Oh,
you
and know? They're always so amazingly brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. So, I mean, she's calling out the neocons. She's calling out Big Pharma. She's calling out the military-industrial complex. She's pushing all my buttons. I mean...
Well, but... she's still Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, she has a strong conspiratorial streak to
her.
But she was a big QAnon, you know, fellow traveler. And I think there's still elements of what, you know, has been a big part of her persona that come through in that 60 Minutes interview. You know, she didn't talk about the Jews. She just talked about the Israelis, which is the code word for the Jews, you know. So... There was a lot of that that shows she's not totally divorced herself from it. And I have a little trouble with someone who was very much part of that language being used and put into the political realm. That I'm empathetic to what happens when you're a victim of that, but mm-hmm. It's a little rich for her.
But she apologized for being vitriolic herself. That's not an exact quote, but she apologized for her role in making the political discourse so divisive.
I mean, do you really think she's had this, you know, epiphany? Transformation, epiphany?
It's a good season to be talking about epiphanies, isn't it? I don't know, but I want to give her the benefit of the doubt. We'll see. So far, so good.
she's not only not used that kind of vitriolic language, but she's, you know, she's made, she's been candid about why she's retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense. I mean, you know, she sees, and I think more and more people are seeing this, Trump is not governing on what he said he would during the campaign. He's on so many fronts. I mean, she calls us out in the interview too, mm-hmm. on his the cryptocurrency thing. That's him helping his buddies and himself. I mean, he's placating the tech bros left and right. He's, you know, sucking up to foreign leaders. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene was part of the America First movement, mm-hmm. you know. And what
are the characteristics of that?
Well, some involved being somebody isolationist.
I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah. But also, you know, it, some of it's not good. And again, remember where the phrase, mm-hmm. the original America First phrase came from?
Oh, great hero. Yeah. Charles Lindbergh.
Yeah, Charles Lindbergh, really. Who was a devout anti-Semite.
Unabashed anti-Semite. Unabashed anti-Semite, and racist, you know. And
a good, somebody, a good airplane flyer.
Well, and somebody who would have been perfectly happy if the coup against FDR had succeeded.
Yeah.
And you know.
So, I mean, yeah, but that's, meanings change, and maybe that's not exactly what America First means nowadays. But, you know, the bottom line for me, Marjorie Taylor Greene is the tip of an iceberg that we're just starting to see emerge from the water. That iceberg is going to get more and more evident. I mean, I know mostly icebergs melt, right? This one is actually growing in my metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we're going to see more and more key Republicans, people who have been part of that MAGA base, starting to say, no, this is not what we want, not what America needs, not what our constituents wanted. This is not going the right direction. And the remarkable thing to me is that people couldn't see this ahead of time. But anyway, so be it. I mean, the guy is a compulsive liar.
Mm-hmm.
He throws insults around like Santa Claus threw toys around last week.
Well, I mean, the last month or 6 weeks of the campaign, every day it was another issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you knew he was lying about. You know, one day it was no taxes on tips. Next day, you know, it was no taxes on Social Security. Mm-hmm. Then it was gonna be free IVF for everybody. Well, you know. Then they had the Boone rally a week before the election in Madison Square Garden, and this openly. I mean, you could have run the film in the 1933 one, which was the Bund,
right.
You know,
which was the pro-Nazi rally, the
American pro-Nazi party, basically, and you know, and then this whole thing where you know Hispanic men in particular said, oh, he didn't really mean what he said about immigration. He was only going to go after the worst of the worst, right?
Well, he said that.
He said that.
But, and he lied.
But, you know, forget about his history of lying. It was such a classic politician's kind of thing to do. I'm just going to spew off a whole bunch of things that I know it'll hit all the constituencies, right? And it's so totally a lie. It was so obviously a lie. You know, and it was, you know something? It was being an establishment politician, because that's what establishment politicians do. The great populist, the great outsider.
And he's right about that. That is pretty standard for
the great outsider, and he was nothing more than another shill.
Yeah.
That entire 6 weeks or so, you know. As for Marjorie Taylor Greene, I don't know. I think there's an element of what's the point, especially in the House? Why go through all this effort to be a member of the House of Representatives? You don't get to do anything because everything is done from the top. Trump tells Mike Johnson what you're going to do.
Well, and now Mike Johnson's in trouble, especially with the female members of the Republican delegation in the House.
Well, yes,
they have the power to bounce him.
Right.
And
no,
I think they might.
But you know, getting back to why would she resign? Number one, like I said, I think you get tired of it when you really.
I would say number one is because she felt threatened.
No,
badly threatened.
No, I think that came up as she got more deeply in it. I think she retired because she could and still got her full pension. She evidently is one of the best stock investors of all this crew.
Oh, really?
She's made millions of dollars as a stock investor. You know, now, of course, I don't know how much of that's from inside information, which I'm sure there's plenty. You know, but she's become very wealthy. But I think also it's like, yeah, I mean, except for being out there and you're having the cameras on you, you're supposed to do something.
Yeah.
And this is a Congress which has done nothing.
And Congress isn't just about being a member of any legislative body, isn't just about voting on bills and amendments. It's also about using that position to accomplish certain things for your constituents.
And maybe for a legacy. That's exactly right. But if everything is being dictated from Trump, you know, or the real president, Stephen Miller, you know, then it's unlike the Senate. The Senate, they love the perks, you know, because you know you're going to get the best elderly care any place in the world. Is in the Senate, you know, and they get a lot of prerogatives. Plus, they don't have to run every 2 years. But I mean, literally, if you're a representative, from the minute you get elected, you're running again.
And you're raising money all the time. Yeah,
you know. So I think there were a lot of things that probably played into this. I do think her support of the Epstein victims was legitimate, you know, and even crazily, Boebert's support of them.
And Nancy Mace. I think they were all... Yeah. I think
Mace, I guess, I know, was a victim of assault.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in her past. I don't know about the other two. But, you know, I think that part of it's legitimate. And you know, just like everything else, Trump overreacts to everything. You know, and I think he didn't need to attack her. But he felt like she's a threat. You know, Trump.
Oh, I think she's definitely a threat.
Yeah, in the sense that Trump does not want the Republican Party to succeed without him.
He wants sycophants. He wants people who do his will unquestioningly. And even if his will is contrary to what it was when he announced his candidacy and laid out his campaign, and for example, the worst of the worst, that ain't happening. You know, or America first, and yet we see him bombing Iran and not solving the wars in Gaza or Ukraine, and now we see him, you know, setting up to invade Venezuela. I mean, he's so out of step with what he promised to do. And if you're one of these true believers who threw your lot in with him because of what he said, and you know, I mean, and I really expect we're going to see more and more Republicans, and maybe more Republican women in the House, maybe in the Senate, stepping forward with strong, you know, solid criticism of Trump, and probably getting their own disparaging nickname because of it. But I think Marjorie Greene has set a direction where we're going to see more and more follow.
Well, it looks like the direction more and more are following is retiring. I mean, there's going to be a slew of retirements. A lot of people don't want to run again. I mean, for various reasons. You know, one, they are dissatisfied with what the job entails, it being a representative. I think sometimes even these people get up in the morning, look at themselves in the mirror, and wonder how they ended up there. You know, what kind of things are coming out of my mouth that I have to say to, you know, hold my position. Mm-hmm. Others are, you know, the weird thing is there's a whole bunch of already announced retirers that still aren't forcefully, you know, saying they're not going to follow the party line. You know, perfect example is Tom Tillis.
But he's probably afraid of getting death threats and other pushback, other blowback from Trump that could be damaging to him in his post-congressional life.
No, I mean, I guess.
It's hard to know, but I...
It's hard to believe that getting death threats has become so much the norm for political...
Well, people saw what happened in Minneapolis with a state legislator. And her husband,
right? Although we almost never hear about that, right? And
no, yeah,
they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't ask for absolute allegiance to, you know, talking about their careers as opposed to, you know, to
and
Charlie.
And we remember what happened to Nancy Pelosi's husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, it's not unthinkable to imagine that the things that Trump says, like, yeah, if Marjorie Taylor Greene is really a traitor, then it's okay. And what he even said. You know, he doesn't really care what happens to her.
Well, that's
an invitation to do something horrible to her.
No, that actually, I don't think he even sees it that way. He means he doesn't care. He doesn't care because he's a man who has zero empathy.
Yeah, but
and he has no appreciation. And this is where everybody who gets close to Trump ends up.
Yeah.
You get, you know, thrown off the bus.
Look at Comey and Bolton and who else?
All these people so who get moved out. You know, he's gonna get rid of Kristi Noem, supposedly because he was the only person in D.C. who didn't know she was having an affair with Corey Lewandowski. You know, his short-lived 2016 campaign manager, you know, who has a special...
Why would that bother him?
I have no idea. You would think
he'd be praising him for scoring her or something. Who knows?
I don't know, but actually, this is more Stephen Miller, because Stephen Miller feels that she's wasted all this money that they gave in the big, beautiful bill.
Yeah.
You know, and she hasn't built thousands of prisons for the deportees yet with the money.
They've
only had it for 2 months. You can imagine if they're going to build 1,000 prisons with all that money in 2 months. You can imagine the conditions they were going to be building.
The one I'm still surprised to see inside the Trump administration is Tulsi Gabbard, who we've heard nothing from.
They've
recently
got her buried in a bunker somewhere because no one's seen her.
Yeah, you know she's not saying anything about. I mean, I played a clip a couple of weeks ago on this program about what she said about regime change in Venezuela.
Yeah,
and if she were to say that today, she'd clearly lose her job. But right. I can't believe she doesn't agree with what she said that handful of years ago.
Well, I don't know. She's running some kind of project to purge the security portion of the government of anybody who doesn't go along with this.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, tip of the anti-MAGA iceberg. We'll see where it goes.
Well, you know, the irony is going to be that some of this redistricting they're doing that's going to put more Democrats, former Democrats, into Republican districts
mm-hmm.
may really work against them. Because,
it might.
Yeah, there's enough dissatisfied independents, and if you move more Democrats into some of these districts, some of these five districts they're supposed to get in Texas,
it'll
they
be
may
interesting,
not.
Interesting to see who Trump endorses in Marjorie Taylor Greene's district. And if Marjorie Taylor Greene endorses somebody else, that would be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Yep.
That's a long shot. But hey, we got to take a short break. It's Charles Goldman here with me, Ed Fallon, on the Fallon Forum. We're going to talk about the national security document that Trump released this a couple weeks ago that, wow, lots of concerns there. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Thanks again to our partners, including Catholic Peace Ministry. CPM promotes a peaceful resolution to war and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, Charles, so like me, I'm sure you've read every page of President Trump's national security document.
No, I have not read every page of it, but okay. I've read multiple commentaries on it with lots of quotes from it.
Yeah, I haven't read every page either, but I read enough of it to be offended. Gosh. I mean,
you know, which is kind of interesting because it's supposed to be a document outlining our strategic orientation.
It's a campaign document.
It's a piece of propaganda, and it includes some of the usual greatest hits. you know, stop date wars.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was actually disappointed. I don't think it included, we were a dead country and now we're really hot. You know, that's another favorite. Yeah, there's a portion where he talks about, yeah, I mean, not that President Trump wrote it, you know, like since my first day of office. Really? This is supposed to be a document about what is the grand strategy?
Right.
Right? Foreign policy, military, and everything.
Yeah, and all that stuff is like blah, 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 expected. The grand strategy is really disturbing. You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, he's expressed concern about nuclear weapons, but from the document, we want the world's most robust, credible, and modern nuclear deterrent, plus next-generation missile defenses, including a golden dome for the American homeland,
God,
to protect the American people, American assets overseas, and American allies.
Yeah, people need to see House of Dynamite, you know, which is about the nuclear status of the world right now. And one of the sections is you know, called Hitting a Bullet with a Bullet. The idea that given the speed of present-day intercontinental missiles, that you're going to be able to defend yourself against them to any great degree is a joke. And the Golden Dome will be a massive waste of money.
Yeah, well, it's similar to what Reagan proposed back in the 80s, the Star Wars defense system.
Well, but the testing of this testing of these systems is done under very controlled conditions where you actually know where the missile's coming from. So all it proves is you can shoot a missile down if you know where it's coming from.
Yeah.
And even then, it's only 60% successful. I mean, I guess Reagan's strategy was that it would force the Soviet Union to spend a lot of money to counter something that was never really going to exist. I think that, you know, President Trump thinks they're really going to build it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Golden Dome he's talking about or is referring to is, you know, the Israeli protection against much more conventional weapons, not nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I found this in the document very disturbing. The United States must never be dependent on any outside power for core components, from raw materials to parts to finished products. Raw materials necessary to the nation's, or sorry, core components necessary to the nation's defense or economy, we must resecure our own independent and reliable access to the goods we need to defend ourselves and preserve our way of life. This will require expanding American access to critical minerals and materials while countering predatory economic practices. Moreover, the intelligence community will monitor key supply chains and technological advances around the world to ensure we understand and mitigate vulnerabilities and threats to American security and prosperity. Yeah. We will resecure our own independent and reliable access to the goods we need. What does that mean?
Well, I would say the one part of the document that does, you know, sort of outline a change in orientation is a return to, you know, kind of a Monroe Doctrine approach,
exactly,
which is that pay attention to the Americas. That will be our sphere of influence. It's a return to, you know, kind of the late 1800s spheres of influence. Certain countries,
well,
were the dominant country over more of a contiguous.
But it's
kind
an
of
expansion of the colonialism that we have seen from this country for a long time. I mean, the American influence in Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala. I mean, it's a horrible track record. Chile, Pinochet. I mean, we have done horrible things in countries in our hemisphere, and Trump, what he's talking about here is doubling down on that unabashedly. With the intent of making sure that we secure the minerals and materials we need.
Well, yeah, it's about the rare earths.
Rare earths, oil, who knows? Farmland in Brazil? I mean, what percentage of our... I mean, we talked about this in the program recently with J.D. Scholten about the Tyson closing its big plant in Lexington, Nebraska, so it can continue to import more and more beef from land in Brazil, you know, you know, pasture land that used to be rainforest.
Well, you know, I mean, the doctrine or what they're calling the Trump corollary of the Monroe Doctrine is about that we will be the dominant country in this hemisphere and that we will make arrangements either through trade or, pushing businesses,
right,
you know, on these other countries that are, you know, based in America. So instead of this time, instead of it being bananas from Central America, it's going to be rare earths or other things from, you know, there or South America.
Yeah.
The question is, where does Canada stand in this? Because it's a little
unclear. They're not even a real country,
yeah,
Charles.
You know.
I'm kidding, everyone.
And it also, I think, shows clearly Europe is on their own.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, and I want to talk about Europe too, but just one more thing from this document. They even use the word Monroe Doctrine. The yeah. U.S. will reassert and enforce the Monroe Doctrine to restore American preeminence in the Western Hemisphere. I identify strategic points and resources with a view to their protection and joint development with regional partners.
Right. Who will
joint development?
Yeah, that'll be with Jared and you know some of the other.
Yeah, those are the regional
partners. The business dealers.
It goes on to say, successfully protecting our hemisphere also requires closer collaboration between the U.S. government and the American private sector. That to me, I mean, there's so much in here that reveals the new colonialism, the new imperialism, the additional movement into regime change. I mean, what we see in Venezuela right now, this is the tip of the iceberg here. I mean, different
icebergs. No, you see, I think actually, especially if you look, you know, about with these negotiations between the United States and Russia over the Ukraine, it appears from what I've been reading that a lot of what they're talking about is the opportunity for Russia and the United States to pursue joint business ventures. And I think their view is, you know, that's Steve Witkoff, you know, his buddy,
yeah.
his real estate
yep,
buddy.
Yep.
And that if you make deals, you can compete in the business world, you know, and that is a surrogate for war, but it's not war. And that would be a more peaceful competition. Because it seems to talk a lot about, they give a lot of deference to Russia in this document.
As having a
historical claim to this Eurasian dominance. And most of what they talk about in terms of China is about China as an economic competitor, not their physical threat to, you know, American allies such as Taiwan, Japan, and the Philippines. Mm-hmm. You know, so...
Interesting that I did unless I missed it, I didn't see India fitting into this conversation very much.
I'm not sure. I think they, in passing, talked about India.
Yeah. Or Africa.
Right. No, I mean, really, they've decided, and I think... In that sense, it was an important document. A lot of people, like yourself, came there. You know, the stuff about, you know, immigration is going to destroy Europe. You know, we have to protect families, stable families, to have children. You know, it's the whole pronatalist thing, and you know, that's probably J.D. Vance probably wrote that part. you know, and that, you know, we have to have. Some, you know, the subtext is that there has to be, you know, purity of the blood. You know, there's an element, obviously, of you know, classic 1930s fascism and racism to it. It's not a big, it's the subtext. But really, what's important here is, you know, under this regime, they're going to turn the attention into the Western Hemisphere, and everybody else is out there's going to have to figure it out. You know, and that's going to make America first.
So what happens after we accomplish a regime change in Venezuela? What about Cuba? I'm surprised that there hasn't been more conversation about overthrowing the Cuban government. I'm surprised every presidency that isn't more prominent. But this one in particular seems like that's a plum that Trump would be very willing to deliver to his supporters in Miami.
Well, remember, he's not running again.
Because
not running for a third term. If he's still here after his second term is supposed to be over, it's not because he ran for the office. I think you have to realize once he's not president, I don't think he cares what happens. In fact, he will resent the fact that there's somebody who wants to be his successor unless their last name is Trump. Mm-hmm. You know? And... So I don't know that he thinks that far ahead. But I truly think that they think that business would make the world a safer place. You know?
And for who?
For the people who have. I mean, you
right.
know,
for the
countries that will be the extractors. You know, obviously it may not be great. Well, you know, Russia, China.
Right, meaning the superpowers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he won't be a superpower in a global sense anymore. It'll just be your hemisphere or your immediate environs that you will become.
Well, that's one way to divide up the world. The U.S. gets the North America, South America. Russia gets Europe and part of Asia. China gets the rest of Asia.
Well, it eliminates having to have a very complex whole world policy, right? It allows them to divorce themselves from the Ukraine. It allows them to say, hey, Taiwan, once you build those chips over, you know, chip manufacturers over here, do we really care if the Chinese take you over?
Well, regarding Europe in the national security document, it's pretty clear that the Trump administration supports the far-right movements that are gaining strength in European countries.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they're anti-immigrant.
Yeah, and they're also, I just keep coming back to those who don't remember history or aren't willing to read it will be condemned to repeat it. And you know, we saw what fascism did to Europe back in the 30s, early 40s. And, I mean, do people remember that? I mean, it seems like some of that history is being erased.
Well, do people remember that we had an isolationist United States prior to World War II?
After World War One, right. I kind of understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the other part of the history you have to remember, which is that isolation, especially in this world, which is way more interconnected than that world doesn't work out very well, because ultimately there's going to be a conflict that you get drawn into.
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing is that it doesn't appear that this administration has any idea of the value of allies. It also seems to ignore completely that if that's how you're going to shut yourself off, the dollar is not going to be the reserve currency of the world anymore. They'll find something else.
Do you see movement away from that already?
To some degree.
And to what, the Chinese currency?
Yeah. Maybe the euro.
Yeah.
But the thing is that that's why gold has gone up so much. The dollar's gotten weaker, and people want something tangible to say we actually have some wealth.
Well, what about crypto?
Oh, crypto's as ephemeral as any fiat currency is, you know. But, I think that they've decided they're going to have an autarky. We're going to make everything. We're going to replicate everything that's being done in all these other places. And Americans are going to find out that an autarky is very expensive.
A what?
An autarky. It's when everything is done by a country itself, essentially. So you build...
But that this document is not talking about that. It's talking about...
Well, no, it is. It says that we're going to shut ourselves off in our hemisphere and produce what we need because we don't want to be dependent on a supply chain from China. Even though China can make the same item.
No, we'll get what we need from other countries if we can't get it
No,
here.
The other countries he's talking about are the countries that we are going to subsume, which is in our hemisphere.
Yeah, I get it. Right. That's a lot of landmass.
No, of course it is. But the point is that they are no more efficient than we are in efficiency in terms of cost than when compared to a place like China. China is amazingly efficient at doing high technology, and it's particularly in terms of manufacture. And it's not just about their slave labor. It's also about they're highly automated, and they put a lot of resources into it, So, I think the document was important.
Well, it's important because
it comes
from the White House.
Well, no, I understand that, but a lot that comes from the White House is just self-congratulatory. I mean, but this really is a change, would be a change in American policy of huge substance,
Yeah, and again, I think the key element is it's going back to the Monroe Doctrine. We have a right to do whatever we want to do in this hemisphere because we're America, we're exceptional, and we're going to do it with the assistance of our business partners.
Well, it's way
more than just about bananas anymore.
No, I would correct you. Actually, the Monroe Doctrine was that other European powers were not going to, bring their power into our hemisphere. And it was a reaction to the fact that especially the Spanish Empire in this hemisphere was falling apart and these countries had become independent. The Monroe Doctrine didn't say we were going to go take away the independence of these other countries. It said we would protect the independence of these other countries. This is way more Machiavellian.
Yeah.
That's why it's the Trump car.
Monroe document on steroids.
Well, the Trump car is a version of the Teddy Roosevelt car, which is somewhat similar, just not to the same degree of submission that we expect from these other countries.
Yeah. Hey, we got to take a short break, and we're going to change subjects here when we come back. Charles and I are going to talk about self-driving cars. I'm intrigued by the idea of a self-driving bicycle, but we'll be back in a minute with more conversation for you on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks for our partners, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, Charles Goldman with me in the studio. Ed Fallon, your host here. We are discussing self-driving cars and, interesting stuff. Let's start from scratch. Charles, your thoughts?
I actually was just out in California recently in San Diego, and they had a lot of Waymo taxis there.
And Waymo stands for?
I have no idea what Waymo stands for. Okay. It's a company name. And, these are completely driverless. There's no steering wheel to come out if you're really in trouble. I mean, it really is a technological achievement. It uses three different ways of sort of apprehending its environment. And because of that, it's much safer. In fact, as the piece in the Times pointed out, partial assist cars, like the Tesla, which is not truly autonomous. It has to be monitored, by a human. That's why they have the camera and make sure you're not in the back seat, watching porn or something when you're supposed to be driving the car.
Okay, wherever that example came from.
So partially driving cars actually have higher accident rates per mile than a conventional, human-driven car.
Right.
But the Waymo has been tested out. I think it's in four cities where it's used extensively.
All in California?
I don't know if it's all in California. I thought they had them in Pittsburgh too, but I can't say for sure. They reported their database, and the database, as it was pointed out in the article, is wide open. You can go in and do this research yourself. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to rely on the numbers they're giving you. But basically, what they showed was that. The crashes per million miles that resulted in serious injury was 0.02 crashes per million miles for a Waymo versus 0.23. So 10 times higher human-driven car.
And what about the seriousness of the injuries?
I'm sorry?
What about the seriousness of the injuries?
I mean, there were a couple, there were three fatalities, but two of the three of them were because they were hit by human drivers.
Okay.
Somebody going through a light, and airbag deployments were like 0.35 crashes per million versus 1.65 for human drivers. And the big difference was any injury was 0.8 per million miles versus 4 per million miles for...
Five times higher.
So this is, you know, this is a proof of concept, which is that this does work and it is safer.
Well, what surprises me is that they've had enough tests. They've had that many miles enough to run tests. I mean, we're mm-hmm. talking about millions of miles
right.
that have been tested.
Right.
There have been that many miles of driverless cars out there?
Yeah. Well, it's part of the agreement to be on the streets that they had to keep this database.
Yeah.
You know, so, and again, the database is open.
Are the car companies that build conventional vehicles disputing the information?
No, I mean, what would they dispute it with? I mean, this is out there. This is not, you know, this is not something you would doubt. I mean, the big question is, it's very expensive. These, you know, the cars are average about $100,000.
Why are they so much more expensive?
Well, because it's driving itself. It's got a lot of electronics on it.
The propulsion technology is what's driving the cost up.
No, it's the monitoring technology and the programming, and they need to continuously update it. I mean, the propulsion is an electric car, so that can be standardized. And obviously, if they build more, it'll get cheaper. So it's expensive. But it's going to be a competitor. It's going to be a competitor to Uber. It's going to be a competitor to traditional taxis. It will be not good for anyone who makes regular cars, because this will change people's freedom. Older people will be able to get from place to place on their own. It will also indirectly make it safer to be on the roads, because older people, who are huge risks at hitting other people with their cars, including pedestrians, won't be driving.
Right.
There'd be no reason for them to drive.
So in the cities where the four cities you said that have seen a significant number of miles driven by these driverless cars,
mm-hmm.
do people own those cars, or are they basically like a taxi service?
They're a taxi service.
So you don't even own your own car?
No. I mean, the ones I saw were all taxis. I didn't see anybody driving one.
But doesn't there's an element of American identity that really values their car. I mean, people brag about their car all the time, their pickup truck. You know, this.
Well, no, of course.
Yeah, but
some of that's programmed into you. I mean, you watch commercials as you're driving your pickup truck through some pristine stream.
Are you really
going to
take that away from all of us, you communist?
No, I'm not saying that I'm going to take it away from you, because it's not going to happen overnight. And I like...
Well, so you're going to take it away from
us,
but it's gradually.
I like driving. I like contact driving.
What do you mean contact? You mean running over pedestrians?
No, I mean with your wheels on the ground.
Oh,
and you're
that kind of contact. Okay, good.
Right? No, I mean, I do like to drive. And I agree. It's enjoyable. But there comes a point in which, you know, vision isn't good enough, really. A lot of people can't drive at night very well because they can't see. As you get older, your reflexes... obviously not as good. It's not that safe for you to be out on the road. And I think this will give people, this will be good for a lot of people. It's going to be bad for a lot of businesses.
But you're talking about older people. But what about the guy or the gal who just got their license 4, 5, 6 years ago?
And none of those people should be driving their cars. there isn't any male under 25 who should be driving their cars. Their brains
are fully formed. They're responsible. They've got kids. They've learned how to be, you know, to be concerned about the rest of the world. Why should they not have the car of their dreams, or maybe even two fancy cars?
No, I'm not saying that you won't be able to have your own car. It's just that this is going to change transportation to a great degree, you know, and it's certainly going to make it safer. Remember, you know, car accidents are still a leading killer of Americans. You know, 40,000, 45,000 people a year.
Yeah.
You know, and if something is you know, 90%+ effective, well over 90% effective, we should consider it.
Yeah, and I would think that over time the safety argument would would be predominant, and that that would be a huge motivation to, not just push to providing incentives to people who want to purchase the car or purchase access to this technology, but eventually I think there might be compulsion. I mean, it might be okay. You're no longer going to want to drive your own car because taxation is higher. Who knows what it might be, but there's going to be more and more disincentives for people to drive their own cars. I'm only trying to throw out devil's advocate type arguments. I don't drive much. Mm-hmm. I'm on a bike. I'm on my. I walk a lot. So yeah. I don't really care.
I don't see this as something likely to be autocratically enforced on people. I think people are going to want to move to it for various reasons. Because you can go on a long trip, and a long trip in a car is fun, but it's tiring, right? Instead, you can fall asleep and let the Waymo drive.
Yeah, or read or study or
Do
whatever you want
in the
backseat.
You can do other things. Yeah. You won't be as tired. I think the big difference is going to be the freedom it'll give people who now have trouble, because now you'll have autonomous transportation as opposed to having to wait for the bus from the development you live in down in Florida, to show up with the 8 other people, or 9 other people who are in the van, and everybody's got to be at a certain place at a certain time. People like the autonomy, because how it is. I mean, you got, family down south, and, it's like out of the cold, dead hands. If you remember Charlton Heston with the rifle, he'll take this out of my cold, dead hands. I mean, with some of the people down in Florida, it's like, you're going to take this out of my hands when I'm dead. The car keys. I think this is actually, this is a good news. This is also, it shows a huge, it's very ingenious technology.
But how long do people have to wait for a self-driving car to come and pick them up, say?
Well, the way I saw it out there was they just, when they're not, when they don't have somebody in it, they just kind of cruise a certain area. So it's kind of like Uber and Lyft. Better in that the Waymo may be closer.
Yeah, and I assume that what if you have a bunch of stuff to transport somewhere? What if I want to go to the feed store and buy, 4 bags of chicken feed and a couple bags of rabbit feed and maybe a couple bales of straw?
Yeah, I mean, it's you just run it with a GPS, so you'd pull up where you want to go and punch it in.
And they bring a car that can handle all that agricultural product?
I mean, they all seem to be relatively small cars, so you'd have to get the pickup truck.
Or we need to use our Prius like we do now.
Right.
As a pickup truck.
Yeah, no, I mean, I gas-powered vehicles are not going to disappear. It's pretty clear now, especially with this administration.
Especially with Trump, yeah.
Yeah. But I think the thing here is it's not just about the resources. It's about freedom for people who don't have it now. And it's clearly would make the road safer. At a time when we're doing everything we can to make them less safe. I mean, there are vehicles out there that are so huge.
Hummers, SUVs.
Well, the Hummers, I don't
trucks,
think they make Hummers.
Yeah.
Maybe they have brought the Hummer back. But yeah.
I saw a Hummer Hearst.
There are pickup trucks that I'm behind and I'm looking at the license plate at my eye level because the truck is so high.
And you're kind of short.
Well, it's not my height. I'm sitting in a car.
Oh, okay.
So it's just not safe, this mismatch in sizes.
What about self-driving bikes?
Well, bikes are self-driving. Oh, you mean like just sitting there and having
sitting there
pedal?
And
tell you, that's actually a different problem, because a lot of these bikes, these motorized bikes, have become a huge problem. Because talk about two things going in different directions. They go too fast. They're really underpowered motorcycles.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of problems. There's been a lot of injuries, a lot of deaths from these bikes, and no one knows what to do with them because they're classified as bikes.
Yeah,
but
some trails, for example, have a speed limit. Some of those electric bikes, you can go 50 miles an hour on them.
Well, with maybe wind aided and downhill, but they can easily reach into the 30s or 40.
Yeah,
and that makes them dangerous because people. I mean, it's one thing when you would ride a bike, that had kind of an assist motor on it, so that
it helps you get up a hill or something.
Right, something like that. But now they've become essentially, I guess, mopeds. Some
quiet
mopeds.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, you don't hear them coming.
Yeah.
just like your Prius.
Yeah. or Trump in 2016. Nobody heard him coming. Anyway, yeah. So, I think actually this is interesting because bike technology has advanced a lot quicker than car technology in terms of, it's never going to be it's never going to be driverless, riderless bikes, but in terms of
I'm not sure what the point of those would be unless
you'd be sitting back in kind of a trailer pulled by the bike.
Yeah.
And it would just be going along there, doing its thing.
I guess, yeah, that'd be one version of it. I mean, they deliver stuff with drones now. I mean,
it could be a recumbent driverless bike, riderless bike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, what would the point of that be?
I
guess it'd be low cost.
Same thing before.
It'd be low cost transportation.
You could.
It would totally reduce the exercise element of biking.
Yeah, but if you were trying to get from, say, Des Moines to Ames, 30 plus miles, and you didn't want to take a car, and you wanted to be on the trail, and you didn't want to have to tire yourself out and do all that concentrated biking, you could just sit there and read or play the accordion, for example, while the riderless bike takes you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, I'm just, there's a lot of equipment you need to be autonomous. I'm not sure it would fit on a bike. Yeah.
Well, I mean, even with airplanes, I mean, look, how much do pilots actually do anymore? I mean, yeah, they fly the plane.
They fly,
But there's a lot of computer stuff involved, too.
No, I mean, it certainly, with the bigger planes, they're monitoring the plane. Yeah. They're monitoring the computer.
Well, this has been an interesting conversation, Charles. I don't know where it's going to go from here, so we're just going to wrap it up.
Okay. Well, I think no one should worry about their freedom being taken away, that they're going to be forced to use Waymo or equivalent as we go along.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have ulterior motives.
I just think it's a great thing.
Ulterior motives. Anyway, all right, we got to stop now. Charles Goldman with me, folks. Ed Fallon here. Back in a minute. Kathy Burns joining us for our January Garden Q&A. I told that girl I can start right away. But she said, listen, babe, I got something to say. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Hey, Kathy, it's that time of the month where we do our monthly garden Q&A. And January, I'm sure you're all out there in the snow planting your vegetables.
So some people are, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah. So let's see, questions. Somebody said, anyone else love to map their garden and plot everything out? It's totally part of the fun for me.
Do we?
Well, it isn't just fun, though. It's like essential.
Very necessary.
Yeah.
It's also a creative endeavor, like putting together a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
I forget how many growing spaces. We have about 40 growing spaces in our small yard.
Yeah, without a plan, you'd have a really hard time managing crop rotation.
So,
and inputs.
So, Ed, you're the main keeper. I think I created, but you're the main keeper of the now giant spreadsheet that we keep with all the plots labeled as a certain.
Yeah, and it goes back to, I think, 2019.
Yes.
So we know we planted in a spot in 2019.
And this helps us with crop rotation and knowing if we know what grew there the year before or even the year before that, what kinds of amendments would be appropriate for what we'll grow there this year.
So even if you don't love it, do it.
And then I finally took a big poster board and put together a visual map, and I put little sticky notes with the crops' names.
Yeah.
And what we'll use those for very soon is to go through what seeds we need, what seeds we have,
right away.
And then
it is
what to order.
Yeah. So somebody asks a question about coffee grounds. If they have been stored in the winter outside, are they still any benefit to plants? I don't know. I know nothing about coffee.
I did look it up, and okay. they are still beneficial to plants. So if you need more acid in the soil, for instance, or some people suggested that they can help deter rabbits, deer.
If I was a rabbit, kind of they would deter me.
You do.
I'm not a coffee fan.
I'm a coffee gal, and I like tea. Sometimes I had a cup of tea this afternoon.
I've had one cup of coffee in my life, and that was it.
Well, see, you didn't give it a fair chance.
Okay, so January again, seed starting time for some folks. Somebody's asking, what seeds are people starting now?
Yeah, we've already started the artichokes, and you planted those a couple weeks ago.
Well, early December, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we tried once starting asparagus seeds early.
It did okay. Yeah, some of those are now in our asparagus bed.
That's
we'll see how they come along.
We are going to get going any day now on onions, leeks, eggplant, pepper, basil, cilantro. The first of those being onions and leeks.
Yeah, and then eggplant probably the next one.
And as your onions grow, if they get several inches high and leeks too, you can give them little haircuts. You can cut off about the first.
Decapitate them.
Ooh, ouch. Or
haircut's a better metaphor, sorry.
Well, it helps the bulbs build to a stronger base for you. And get ready to plant your brassica by February.
Late February, yeah. So here's a weird one. Anybody ever grow these plants and did the tomatoes actually look like that on the vine?
The picture.
Okay, and the strawberries too. The strawberries are blue. And the tomatoes all growing on one stalk, one branch, are red, yellow, purple, blue, green.
Yeah, that's
what?
That's not real.
How
and that's
gullible
not
are
good.
You?
What clued me off when I first saw this was that the name of the business that's promoting this starts with the word like Patriot or USA. And those are more likely to be scam. Ads. Do not order things from those ads, especially. And you, and whoever asked that question was right to question it.
Yeah.
They are completely.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Stick with things that you know.
Yeah. Okay, so another question. Oh, it says this isn't a question, but a comment. I planted one cabbage, harvested it, and thought that was it. But instead of uprooting the plant, I left it alone. And guess what? It grew five more heads.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I wonder if that would work with me. I could be five times as smart.
Well, talk about decapitation.
Yeah, right. I see some possibilities here. What do you? I mean, okay,
well, it's true.
It is. Yeah, you get.
We had a good cabbage year this year, and the one main cabbage head would often get side shoots. So when you cut it,
you cut
the base of the first cabbage. They even started. Some started to sprout those out before we cut
the first one.
Yeah, that was. We had the most robust year ever.
And for red cabbage, not so much for white cabbage for some reason.
Correct. The
Who
red
knows
cabbage
why.
Tends
and
to
last year was the great cabbage, great year for white cabbage.
Yes.
And not so much for red.
And
go figure.
We, speaking of cabbage, we got onto this year a way to preserve it because we had so doggone much. That has really worked well for us. If you are into the roasted cabbage, which is so easy, you slice it into layers, and then you just douse it with olive oil, salt, pepper, and
douse
roast
it. Or just lightly?
Medium.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 400 degrees or so until it's nice and caramely. And boy, it reduces it down, but it's delicious right then.
And you
and
freeze it.
It freezes just, and you just reheat it in the oven when you're ready.
Yeah. Sounds great. Hey, Kathy, thank you.
You bet.
And thanks to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dennerman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. And finally, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next year, meaning next week, with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.